Howls.
Howlers.
Howls.
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 How's your moving castle?
I don't know. Oh, mine's fine. Howls yours?
You should see the other guy.
Oh, Howls. How's your castle's moving?
How's your moving castle?
Howls your moving castle?
How dare you say that about my wife? She's a slip of a thing. She's not a moving castle.
That's right, yeah. I agree with that.
Sorry to start off on a down note, but my wife's left me.
What, so she's coming back, right?
Of course, she's always coming back. But yeah, she's gone out on the piss, and...
I thought you meant when you said that she'd left you that she wasn't going to come back.
No, she's just popped out for the evening, but it's because the kids are in bed. I've just watched One Piece with my daughter. She's listening to Harry Potter.
One Piece of what?
It's One Piece of...
What, a three-piece movie? It's One Piece of a three-piece movie, or...?
No, One Piece is a Japanese anime cartoon.
Oh, it's an anime.
They remade it on Netflix as a live action thing. We're watching the live action. I watched a little bit of the original anime, and it's not suitable for a 10-year-old girl, you know. Very, very busty, very busty, scantily clad characters.
Drawings.
Yeah, drawing. They're drawings.
They're all drawings. Yeah.
But also, you know, it's okay to, it's odd that how they're proportioned, because no human female
looks like that.
No.
Or male.
Yeah, all the men. I mean, the men look more like men. Than
I thought you meant what I was referring to was the notion that no male or female human looks like a female, some of the female anime characters.
Yeah, was that an important addition to the sentence?
Oh, I just think dogs don't look like them either.
Oh, for Christ, here we go.
Plants don't look like yeah. them. Tall buildings don't look like them.
Slippers don't look like them.
Crocs, all types of shoes, actually. I can't think of any pair. Well, maybe there are some pairs of shoes that look like some specific female anime characters.
Yeah, and those Crocs are in my bed, and I am doing things to them that you would not believe.
Hey, that's just reminded me of something, actually. Can I tell you a story that happened to me? I went to a concert, a gig concert, and I realised I hadn't been to one for a very long time. Now, I've been to classical music concerts, of course, because that's the kind of person I am. But I hadn't been to a good old-fashioned gig-a-rooney for a long time. And a friend of mine gave me a ticket to, or invited me along to this band I'd never heard of before. It was at Brixton Academy, Brixton O2 Academy, I think you're supposed to call it. And I hadn't been there for a long time. Got there from work, you know, and I was meeting my friend who was at a 50th birthday party with a bunch of other 50-year-old guys. And so they'd been in the pub, they'd been off work, and they didn't have any bags with them. And I had a bag with me because I was coming from the office. And apparently you can't have a bag anymore when you go to a gig. Did you know this about gigs, that you can't have a bag?
No, I didn't know that.
Apparently you can't have a bag. I mean, I'm not actually... I don't want to complain about it too much because I know there was a very serious incident of overcrowding at Brixton a few years ago. In fact, I think there were some fatalities involved.
Yeah, I don't think it had anything to do with you and having a bag, though.
Well, I don't know. My point is I don't know. Maybe there's some specific health and safety regulation that's kind of built around this notion. So I said to the man, when he pointed at my bag and said, that's a bag... Because you're allowed a bag that's apparently smaller than an A4 clipboard, but, you know, I think that's just, like, little grab bags, isn't it? It's not, no one's backpack is smaller than that. I said, well, have you got a cloakroom? And he said, yeah, but not for bags. I said, what's it for? Cloaks? What? No one's wearing a cloak, guy, you know? he didn't find it funny. Oh. Anyway, he then pointed And he said, look, you can either use this or you can use an app. And I was like, what? How do I use an app for my bag? He was like, just, I don't know. Anyway, I turn around and there are all these little shops alongside Brixton Academy that are offering a bag check service. So I went in the first one. It was a nail salon. There's only a couple of them. And there was a big queue. People leaving their bags with this guy. So I took everything that mattered out of my bag and put it in my pockets so that I became the bag, basically. I was then a bag with just...
Well, come on. You've always been a human bag.
Well, I'm a meat bag for sure. But now I was also a bag, a clinking bag of keys. I was a bag of, you know, work pass that I know they'd be upset with me if I lost for security reasons. I was a bag of wallet, which I haven't had a wallet in my pocket for like 10 years. You know, that was, it really took me back.
That sounds like a Natasha Bedingfield lyric. What? I haven't had a wallet in my pocket.
Are you thinking that's for a specific tune?
Just, yeah, this first tune
I haven't had a wallet in my pocket for 10 years.
See, you're Mr. Music. You write I come up with the lyrics, you come up with the song.
Except I came up with the lyrics as well in this instance.
Yeah, but I identified
you. You're the guy from the music industry who still goes to see new bands. Anyway, I hadn't had a wallet in my pocket for 10 years. And now I was just walking, you know, it's heavy. Guess how much it cost me to keep my bag in a completely insecure location for the gig? Guess how much it cost? How much do you think they would charge per item that they think, because we can get away with it?
The beauty of this system is they've got I think it's called a captive audience, yes. Something like that. Not captive, like you're over a barrel.
That's what
it's called. If you want to go to the gig, you're paying whatever it is. So it's like, what will you pay before you go? Forget it, I'm not going to the gig and I'm not going to... this.
Because a cloakroom, your traditional cloakroom, costs £2 or something, right?
Right. Well, I know the price will be, they'll say £30.
That's insane. £30 is absolutely insane.
All right,
insane.
£20.
No, that's crazy. That's absolutely...
All right, £10.
Yeah, £10, that's how much it costs.
Oh, great, I nailed it.
Not only were you wrong, you also took all the wind out of the sails of the story. You should have said £5. That's where that goes. It's like you normally spend £2 on a cloakroom, so they're going like, yeah, fuck it, we can get five out of everyone here. So you do £5. Not even £10. £10. And I left the gig early because I thought, well, I don't want to get stuck in a fucking second queue, you know, first queue out of the building and then a second queue to get my bag before I then get stuck in that. So I left, you know, a good 15 minutes before the end of the gig.
Missed all the bonus tracks from the Pussycat Dolls.
That's right, yeah.
Because that's who you'd gone to see.
No, I know, and it was the last time they were going to perform together as well, because I think one of them was going to die later due to old age, you know.
And you'd never heard of that band.
No, I'd never heard of that band. Because I don't go to see new bands anymore. You know.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host. And Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost.
Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot. You Forgot podcast with me, the host, Dom Richmondo, aka Adam Richmond. That's my full name, just in case some people think my name is Adam Richmondo, but I've got to put that to bed. This is the show where we chat about the movies or films that we forgot we'd even seen in
some
the first place.
Some people think my name's Adam Richmondo.
They do. It's happened. It's embarrassing now.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had to correct a number of people. And that voice you hear is my co-host, my bro-host, my Mr. Joe Devine. Here he is.
Hello.
Mr. Joe Devine.
Oh, hello. Oh.
No, hang on a sec. Oh. Try again.
Hang on a sec. Hello?
Yeah?
Can you hear me?
Hello? Oh, no. Hello?
I just wanted to check that you could hear me.
Yeah, no, thanks. I can hear you, Joe.
I'm just recording
a podcast.
I'll call you back later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hey, how's it going, Joe, aside from your bag?
Well, there's a good chance that bit about my bag got cut, you know? Pretty high chance, I'd say. But other than that, I'm completely fine. I'm completely fine. A crow attacked my wife, but other than that, I'm fine.
And the Oscar goes to Cameron Crowe for Almost Famous.
This is the first Academy Award and third nomination for Cameron Crowe. In 1996, he was a double nominee for Best Picture and Original Screenplay for Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, great. It's on today's episode, we're doing... I'm going to get my phone here. We are doing the... Let's turn the brightness up on my phone because it's low. Here we go. we are doing Howl's Moving Castle from 2004.
Howl!
Yeah, and it's directed by Hayao Miyazaki.
Yep.
It's a Studio Ghibli or Ghibli film. Some people say Ghibli, some people say Ghibli.
Who's right? Should we put it to bed today?
Don't worry, we're not going to get into it, guys.
No, we're going to put it to bed.
No, we're not. Nothing's getting put to bed. My children got put to bed, and that's it. He wrote the flick as well, Miyazaki, and it's based on a... I don't know if it's based on a book of the same name, but it was written by Diana Wynne Jones, Howl's Moving Castle. I think it's a British story. Should we find out? Should we find out if it is?
I'm actually just listening to a pronunciation of... So in Japanese, it's Ghibli.
Great.
A lot of people in English say Ghibli, but it is Ghibli.
Right. Joe's put it to bed.
Yes, it's in bed now. It's snoring. It's fast asleep. It's Studio Ghibli. Everybody else needs to get put down with all these GIF motherfuckers. You know, it's clearly GIF.
I've always said Ghibli, and I was always right. Lovely to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're just a couple of right guys.
This is going to be a tricky episode to talk about because I imagine we both love this flick. And whenever we both love something, it's a lot harder to get conflict and this... podcast thrives on conflict. It is based on the book of the same name by British author Diana Wynne Jones, first published in 1986 Willow Books of New Eight a second. Let me get to the end of the joke.
Oh, you're doing a whole... You've extended the whole thing now. My bad. Do it again.
Based on the book of the same name, Howl's Moving Castle, by British author Diana Wynne Jones, first published in 1986 by Green Willow Books of New York. No, it's not called by British author Diana Wynne Jones, first published in 1986 by Green Willow Books of New York.
Thank God for that.
It's called Howl's Moving Castle.
Right, yeah.
What a waste of time. What a
Some
waste
people
of my
think
life.
I'm called a dumb rich mondo.
and here's to the Letterboxd blurb. The blurb I read off Letterboxd.
Yeah.
It's 119 mins, which I don't mind. I wouldn't say there's much to shave off this. The two lived there. That's the bit in caps. That's weird. The two lived there. I don't know what that means.
The two lived there. The two.
Sophie.
Wait. It's the two.
The like, two.
Word two.
Sophie. The two lived there. I think it means Sophie and Hal. But you, after this, you have to do the IMDb.
Okay.
The two live there. Sophie, a young milliner, is turned into an elderly woman by a witch who enters her shop and curses her.
What do they call her? A milliner?
Milliner. Yeah, hat maker.
Is that what that means? A milliner is a hat maker?
Yeah, milliner.
Oh,
yeah.
I never knew that. I thought it was a hatter.
I don't know. Yeah. No, it's not. It's a milliner.
Milliner or hatter? So Miller, a hatter generally makes, sells, or repairs structured hats, traditionally for men, so like felt fedoras or bowlers, for example, while a milliner designs, creates, and sells decorative hats and headwear, traditionally for women. Hatters focus on durable, blocked, or molded styles. Milliners work with varied materials like ribbons, feathers, and fabrics to create fashionable items.
And that is a Ghibli fault. You know, they do tend to err on, I would say, it's not sexist, but more traditional
right.
modes and roles, you know, women and the milliners. Female character,
yeah,
the female characters, it would always be a milliner and not a hatter,
right? Yeah,
now I'm not having a go at them, that's just what their story vibe is,
yeah,
you know.
Whereas when I read the subtitles in the film, they definitely used the term hatter.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. The subtitles used the word hatter. That's why I was confused as to what a milliner was. That's kind of interesting, right? Maybe that's a choice. Or maybe it's just a translation.
It's not, because if you watch it, it says on the shop it's milliner.
Right.
In the visuals, they write milliner.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So the woke police have typed in a different word on the subtitles. Sorry, it's not fun to make fun of the woke police. I quite like the woke police.
Right. You are the woke police when it suits you. Anyway, there we go. Milliner. Didn't know that.
Milliner. How about that? Sophie encounters a wizard named Howl and gets caught up in his resistance to fighting for the king. If you watch the flick with the dub, in the English dub, you'll hear the likes of Christian Bale, and you'd hear the likes of Lauren Bacall, and you'd hear the likes of... Shit, who else? Who else did I make a note of? Oh, Billy Crystal.
Is Billy Crystal Calcifer?
Yeah, Billy Crystal is Calcifer.
Right.
Emily Mortimer voices Sophie. She's fantastic. Mm. And Josh Hutcherson is the little lad. As I'm talking about the English voice cast, let's go straight into one of the key things when anyone talks about a Studio Ghibli film. Joe's put his finger up. Sorry.
Excuse me, you didn't let me. You got me really excited by saying I could read the IMDb, and then you've just blown straight by it. You know, it's like you've built me up to something, and then you've poured all my contents out onto the floor.
Yeah, sorry, because I struck on something more interesting, but no, you're right. What is the IMDb?
I don't know if I want to read it now. Do you think I should? Do you really think I should read it?
No, I really don't think you should.
Well, if I were to read it, though, how do you think I should do it? Like, would it be with a particular voice or in a particular... Like, would I have any acting notes from you? Instructions, stage directions?
I would do it in the mode of a Ghibli, you know, the vibe of Ghibli. That doesn't mean Japanese, it just means...
Oh, yeah, well, like, no, I would never have done... I wouldn't have done that.
No, but, like, you were doing the voice, English voice dub...
Right, okay. I'll do it in an anime style, yeah?
When an underconfident young woman's cursed with an old body by a spiteful witch, her only chance of breaking the spell lies with a self-indulgent yet insecure young wizard and his companions in his legged walking castle!
That's quite anime, wasn't it? Did you like it?
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, I put quite a lot into... the performance.
Yeah, no, I saw and I really liked it.
Right. Because I could have held back more, but I thought, well, might as well go for it here. You know, I'm among friends. I'm among friend.
You are among friend. And let's talk about dubbing versus subtitling.
Right.
Because when it comes to Ghibli, this is where, if you talk to anyone about a Ghibli...
Anyone who knows anything.
All the little badge of honour is... Did you watch the subtitled or did you watch the English dub?
Guess what I did and I'll guess what you did.
Well, I already know what you did.
What?
You watched the subtitled version.
How do you know that?
Because you got Hatter.
Yeah, shit, that's true. That's true. I did watch the subtitled version. I predict that you watched the English version, the English dubbed version.
Yeah, because I told you when I revealed...
Your scorn for the people who didn't do the same thing as you.
No. Okay, so here's the... I was the guy back in the day where, yeah, I was like, oh, I've got to watch Spirited Away it with the subtitled version.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to... And generally, I've always erred on all that wankery.
Right.
And watching Howl's Moving Castle, I started with the subtitled version. And then my daughter came downstairs... And I'd mentioned I was going to watch it, and she joined in. And I sort of said, it was quite patronising. I said, oh, sure, do you want to switch to the English dubs? Because really, that's what I wanted to do. And she was like, no, it's fine. I like it. And I kept for 5 minutes, I kept saying, "Are you sure?
Yeah.
You sure you don't want to switch to the English dubs?"
Slow she was like, reader. No.
This is fine. I quite like this. And I went, "Do you know what? I'm gonna make a call. I think you'll enjoy this more if we switch to the English."
Listen, have you ever heard of Christian Bale?
Huh? Well, because I think I'd only been able to see the English dub version at the cinema, and I remembered Christian Bale's howl, and his howl is fantastic. And not only that, rewatching it, because you see the young Sophie age to the old Sophie. There's so much nuance to the different voices that I couldn't tell the nuance. My Western ear couldn't get a sense in the performance of the Japanese voices. I just was missing all the nuance of it. Mm. And as soon as I switch the old Sophie and the young Sophie, it's just brought beautifully to life.
Mm.
And that becomes so important at the back end of the movie. This is one of the top only Ghibli movies where you can argue that if your Japanese isn't your first language, then you should watch the English dub.
And it's fine anyway, isn't it? I mean, I understand dubbing and the snobbishness around it as it relates to live action films where the actor that you're seeing on screen is saying something. I'd never want to watch something where the mouth isn't lining up with what I'm hearing. But as it relates to animation, one of the most fantastic things about animation is that you can do this. And I think there's a difference between the way that Studio Ghibli approaches dubbing, because it's not really dubbing, is it? It's just revoicing the thing. We're using the wrong word, probably. There's a difference to the way that Studio Ghibli approaches having an English language version of their film than perhaps the standard expectation. They hire fantastic actors who really give something to it and breathe something into it. So I don't think we should be snobbish about it. I did watch the Japanese subtitle version. I didn't really think about it. It was just the first one that came on, and it's always been my experience of watching them. But I remember talking to a friend of mine from Portugal who said that one of the reasons that people in Portugal speak English perhaps a lot better than some other European countries, or a lot more commonly than other European countries, is because they don't dub stuff. So like Germany, France, Italy, Spain, like these countries, it's much more common for them, with bigger television industries than Portugal has, when they import popular series, they dub them, and they pay actors in their own language to dub over them. And so you don't have this kind of like general cultural approach to listening to English and reading subtitles over a long period of time. My friend says, because Portugal's TV industry just didn't have as much money, they just didn't do that. They just had subtitles instead, and therefore there's arguably a far broader proportion of the population speak a higher standard of English as a result of that kind of cultural absorption over a period of time. So I always thought that was interesting.
Did you ever fact check your mate's assertion, like, just because he's the only guy from Portugal he said that, like, anecdotally?
Yeah, never fact checked.
You hold it in high regard, but is that actually true?
I never fact checked that, no.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Well, let's just take it as read that it's fine.
I got fact checked on something the other day, something that I believed for a really long time, about steel toe cap shoes.
I was there, mate. You were there listening to the podcast. Yeah. I heard the first story on this podcast, and then to hear you fact checked by your fucking producer was one of the best moments of my life.
The thing is, so many people laughed at that, but he messaged me and said, "This is wrong. Do you want me to cut it out?" And I said, "No, pull my pants down. I love having my pants pulled down. This is something people don't understand about me. I love it." Hey, if having my pants pulled down is gonna result in people seeing my penis, then that's all I want to happen.
I love watching this film. I think maybe I would have seen it on release in 2004. Maybe again, probably 5 to 6 years later. So it's been 16 years, and I just take a Ghibli for granted a lot of the time. I'm like, Howl's Moving Castle, that one, I like that. It's not Spirited Away. I don't need to rewatch that. I'm going to wait for my daughter to be a little bit older. And then you say it, I've got to watch it. And it was just an utter joy to put this on. And the animation is gorgeous. I love how Miyazaki picks very English stories a lot of the time. Like Arrietty, that's the Borrowers. Ponyo's not. Not. That's one of the old... that's the Little Mermaid. Yeah. Well, he's done another one as well. He didn't. But there's Tales of Earthsea that's part of Ghibli, which is Ursula Le Guin. They just fit together. And they bring... He obviously brings this amazing different sensibility to it. And it's just all the... This is Howl's Moving Castle. It's such a perfect pairing with Spirited Away, because it's a character who gets thrust into this slightly magical world,
yeah,
and then has to work really hard and goes through a very sort of slow internal change. And I was just editing The Constant Gardener. We were talking about internal performances, not being able to sort of read Ralph Fiennes's performance. You're like, has he changed?
Yeah.
Whereas in a Ghibli, both Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle, you see an internal, very subtle character change happen, and it just blossoms and blooms in front of you. There's also this wonderful charm to it. It's not got this traditional three-act structure that you get in most of Western storytelling. There's these odd little diversions suddenly. You're like, what? Why is this happening? What's going on here? And then it kind of gets back on track. It was just a joy to be able to watch something, not have to take notes, and enjoy it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's almost faultless film. It's fantastic. I've got three favourite moments from the film. Two of them are just sort of inconsequential combinations of like wonderful animation and just great little ideas. One of them is a sort of deeper notion, a thematic notion of the film that the film actually concludes with. So the first two, very near the beginning, I just love it when cheese openly goes into a bindle. In any film, I'm happy to see cheese going into a bindle. I love to see a good old piece of hard cheese that doesn't have cellophane around it or saran wrap or what do we call it, cling film. It's just straight cheese going straight into a bindle, you know? And listen, we don't have bindles enough these days anymore. We've lost the joy of a bindle. I don't know about you, but when I was younger, I tried to make a bindle. Because in animation, when you watch cheese go into a bindle, as you do in Winnie the Pooh, Rupert the Bear, all of these sorts of, you know, you're always hearing when you're reading the Famous Five or the Fantastic Five, whatever they were called. Anyway, when I was younger, I tried to make a bindle because I was always fantasizing about running away from home, you know. And I thought, well, this time I'm really going and I better get my bindle ready, you know. So the first problem was I didn't have a stick, so I tried to use sort of like a broom, you know? And turns out you really don't get a lot in a bindle. It's hard to tie something that is rectangular into a bindle shape, first and foremost. And also in a way that it doesn't slide up and down the stick or you don't lose it completely. In the end, I remember thinking, well, I've had to use an entire blanket here. This is not practical at all. I might as well just carry the blanket. What's the purpose of the stick, you know? And then you start to question the whole purpose of the bindle. I mean, why do you need the stick in the bindle?
Do you want to know what my favorite bindle is?
Yeah
Julie
bindle. yeah the only bindle.
I imagine
I think
maybe...
she's been cancelled as well. Julie
yeah,
bindle.
She has, that's what
she's your favorite bindle. Well, but she is, because she's the only bindle.
Anything off the trolley, dears?
Well, then at number two, my second favourite moment from the film is when Hal's making fried eggs.
Oh, he talked to me.
And he feeds the shells to Calcifer, the fire, and then he just chucks the shells in.
Fantastic, fantastic moment. The preparation of food in Ghibli movies is on another level.
Yeah. I have to say, the preparation of food in Ghibli movies generally is wonderful. You won't watch a Ghibli film where you don't see some food lovingly prepared. And there is something, you know, animation makes these simple everyday foods just seem like the most delicious things that you've ever seen anybody prepare or eat.
So I think what your third thing is going to be something more evocative. I'll just nip in one of my favourite moments.
It's not the bindle, is it? Because I've already mentioned the bindle.
It's not the bindle. I mean, Okay. Obviously that was my number one.
Yeah.
It's the little boy. She gets to the house and there's this little boy, voiced by Josh Hutcherson of Hunger Games fame.
Also voiced by Ryono Kusuki Kamiki in the Japanese version.
And the way that the little boy of the Hal, he lives in Hal's castle, and he's obviously a pupil of Hal, and he's just blasé, his whole vibe and his whole like being and his presence is just like, okay, this is happening now. He doesn't say no to anything. He doesn't say no to Sophie. He doesn't go, what are you doing here? He's like, okay, you're here. And like the Hal's Moving Castle's got this magic door. And the castle's moving, the door can open to different realms.
Yeah.
And the little boy can like change which door opens to where. He just does his little thing with his hands and he gives himself a little beard. He puts a cloak on and it's a little boy who's given himself a little beard. He answers the door and he puts on a little silly voice and goes, hello. Oh, I can't see you. He can't see you right now. It's just wonderful. I could just watch that sequence over and over and over again.
There's also no attempt to ever... The little boy's name is Markle. There's no attempt ever to explain who Markle is, why he's there. Does he have a family? Does he have a backstory? He's a kind of crucial part of the emotional core of the film, because over a period of time, he grows to love Sophie and see Sophie as a kind of mother, grandmother figure, depending on how old she looks at any given time. And he really doesn't want her to leave. There's a moment where he's very worried that she will leave, and he is crying and clutching at her skirts and asking her to stay. And so you have this little insight into who this chap is and maybe what's driving him emotionally. But the film never even comes close to explaining, and it doesn't need to, right? It's not important. This is a kind of he's a lovely part of the. Well, it's a found family film, really, isn't it? It's a family of misfits.
Yeah, and again, that's what's so great about a lot of the Ghibli flicks, is it's all about found family. It's not who you're born to. And what this is why I really get into the Ghibli flicks. It doesn't matter who you're born to, who fucking abandons you and leaves you and doesn't love you.
Right.
It's the special people you find.
Yes.
And who welcome you.
It's when you can take a little boy into your moving castle and teach him how to grow a beard.
But yeah, imagine, it sounds like it's probably just too easy, low-hanging fruit to say, but the Hollywood remake, or just the Hollywood version of this, you'd hear about some bullshit backstory to tug at your heartstrings. And Miyazaki just knows you don't need it. It just slows the story down. It's irrelevant. Yeah.
But Miyazaki is interested in creating a tone and a vibe, right? He's not interested in answering your questions. He's interested in making you feel something. Okay, I'm sliding one more thing in to my list of favourite things. And this is because this relates to some of the other Ghibli films as well. I consider... So you mentioned there about found families. You also have these very fun... In a lot of Ghibli films, you have often the cutest characters are the voiceless characters. So the animals that are... anthropomorphized, or that, you know, in this film there's so many of them, right? So and I would, Markle isn't exactly one. Markle's part of the found family, but when the Witch of the Waste has her powers drained from her and she becomes sort of still kind of suspect grandma, she becomes part of the family, and so she's this kind of odd odd character who becomes quite enjoyable to watch because, you know, she shifts from moment to moment, sometimes being much more lucid than others. There's this little dog who is the spy of the main antagonist, who is the cutest little
dog. Keep talking, Joe. Keep talking.
Yeah, I love it. This dog's called Heen, and this dog doesn't bark. This dog wheezes. Heen just wheezes constantly. And the way that the dog moves, I mean, it's absolutely wonderful. But it doesn't stop there. You also have the scarecrow, the turnip head scarecrow man that Sophie discovers near the beginning. She saves him from Bush, and then it turns out obviously that, you know, there's something more relevant to the story a little later. So my point is, you have not just, you know, most films would be happy with one, and yet this film has just bags of charisma from all of these little side characters. The only Western film I can think, and ironically its setting is Eastern, is Disney's Mulan, the original animation, because you had little Eddie Murphy as the dragon, which is a great, you know, that's one of the fantastic Disney side characters. But he has a little sidekick too. He has a little cricket that is voiceless and that follows him around and allows him to have a double act partner when Mulan isn't around, allows him to play off of this kind of voiceless character. And in many, many scenes, is funnier than Eddie Murphy, right? Just because of the presentation of this thing. So I think it's something that Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli do really, really well. Basically, you can just never have enough of these cool little fucking things. And the reason that people travel thousands of miles to go to Japan to visit the Studio Ghibli museums is because they want to go and see depictions of these cute little characters. I mean, Heen the dog, I'd travel thousands of miles to see Heen the dog.
Well, Heen the dog is quite evocative of the kind of hamster type character that you get in Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big baby in that, and it gets turned into a hamster. And then you get these other characters that get turned into these a little buzzy fly. And the little buzzy fly is carrying around this baby hamster. And it's like silent movie stuff. And then you've got the little soot creatures. Yeah. Spirited Away is like drowning in wonderful little characters like this.
Well, in My Neighbor Totoro, you have Totoro, but then you have two smaller versions. Well, actually, three smaller versions of Totoro. One kind of medium-sized, one smaller, and then there's a tiny little Totoro that's a different color. And then you have the cat bus, and you have the little soot spirits, whatever. I think my point is that Miyazaki, he's the kind of guy where he could stop, but he goes a little further. And maybe even a couple of steps further than he has to.
I think the times we live in are very stressful. And people want to laugh, you know? They want to enjoy themselves, you know, forget their worries. And things are a little silly, you know?
I, talking about soaking yourself in Japanese culture, I watched The Last Samurai starring Tom Cruise.
I watched that as well. Randomly, we watched it within days of each other without it being coordinated.
Yeah.
It's quite good. I think it's good. I like it.
It is actually surprisingly good.
I don't think it's a surprise, but I think it's my favourite Tom Cruise film by some distance, probably. I can't think of a Tom Cruise film that is better for me than that one.
Well, because it's The Patriot, but with Tom Cruise in.
Yeah, of course. No, it's not The Patriot. The Patriot's really violent, like, really violent. This isn't as violent.
No, but it's still The Patriot. It's still, like, a damaged American who is deeply shamed by his actions in a previous war, who has to set the record straight, you know?
Yeah, against a different set of indigenous people.
Right, and, you know, clean his slate.
Yeah.
No, I was surprised because it was fairly... even at the time, people went, oh, you can't have Tom Cruise being a samurai. I think, do you know what? The problem that has been held at its door for so long is because it's called The Last Samurai.
Yeah.
And the poster is of Tom Cruise.
People think he's the samurai.
They've misnamed it.
Yeah.
Because you've got to have Tom Cruise on the poster.
Sure.
It's got to be Tom Cruise. And they've gone, oh, The Last Samurai is such a cool name. And they haven't done the extra thought experiment where they've gone, do you know what? Everyone's going to think he's the Last Samurai.
Yeah.
And he's not, because the Last Samurai are the people that he bands up with.
Katsumoto. Who's played by Ken Watanabe. Watanabe, yeah. Who's fantastic. He's fantastic, yeah.
So the film should be called something completely different.
Yeah. The guy who helped the samurai. The footnotes of the samurai. I regret my actions in America. It should be called I killed your husband, can I live in your house?
This is like Last Man
Out of Saigon. I've asked Colin, can you suggest some alternative film titles for The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise? Here's what Colin says. Now, a straight rename is tricky, because The Last Samurai is already doing a lot of thematic work. Honor, extinction, perspective. That's what Colin says. Here we go. Okay. There's a few different categories. Obviously, Colin always puts things in different categories. So the first category is, if you want something more character-focused on Cruise as the outsider, you could go like this. I want like ratings out of 10 for these names, okay? Or if you want, you could say yes, no, elaborate further. The Outsider's War.
No.
A Soldier Among Samurai.
No.
The Westerner.
No.
An American in Japan.
Forget it.
Forget it. Okay. If you want to lean into the cultural shift, so, or the end of the era, Twilight of the Samurai.
Rubbish.
Apparently that's quite close to an existing film called Twilight Samurai. The Fall of the Samurai.
No.
When the Old Ways Die.
Christ alive, Colin, you suck.
Empire of Change.
No.
I don't mind that. That's okay.
I don't mind Empire, fine, but don't Empire of Change. Yeah. Change? Yeah. Change is not active enough.
Empire of Samurai. Okay, if you want something more poetic, or elegiac?
Elegiac.
I've never heard that word before. What does that mean?
Elegiac.
What does that mean?
Elegiac. It means... Poetic. It just means what you want it to mean, doesn't
okay,
it?
Okay, fine. Blossoms in Winter.
No.
The Last Honor.
Maybe.
Ashes of the Sword.
I like ashes. I like the word ashes, and I like sword, because it's steering away from, you know, but it's not quite right.
Silence of the Warrior.
No. I like what now, here's... You see, we've got some words here. Ashes, warrior, sword.
Yeah.
Which are not...
Ashes of the Sword Warrior.
Yes.
Yeah. Sword of the Ash Warrior. Sword of the Warrior Ashes. What about this? Or, if you're being a bit more blunt, these are Colin's blunt perspective titles. He's only got two, and they're both absolutely insane. Okay. Mm. The first is The White Samurai. The no. second is The Foreign Warrior.
Foreign Warrior.
I think Colin hasn't got the job. Let's be honest, you know. But but can you be better than Colin? I'll give you 5 seconds when I finish talking to come up with a better title than that for any of the ones you just heard. 3, 2,
Blood Warrior.
Blood Warrior. I don't know that that's better.
Sad Warrior.
I don't know.
No.
It does remind me of a terrific novel called Blood Music, though. That was a fantastic
Sword novel. Of Regret.
Sword of Regret. That sounds like your name for your penis.
Yes, that's
true. Ow. Excuse me while I go to the little boy's room and shake off my Sword of Regret. Hey, Adam, someone on the Discord the other day made an observation about how jizzy things were getting here.
Oh, yeah. That's all on me, guys. That's all on me.
You really have been bringing a lot of jizz to the jizzes. To the podcast.
The jizz is all on me, and also those comments are all on me.
No, I don't mind them. Don't mind them. Oh, anyway, do you want to know what my final favourite thing about the film is?
I'd love to.
The main character, Sophie, is cursed at the beginning of the film by the Witch of the Waste, because she, you know, she's caught up with Hal, and the witch, I think, maybe thinks that Hal knows who she is, or she knows Hal. It's a bit of a misunderstanding, really. But she's cursed to look old, and also to not be able to tell anyone about the curse. So instantly, she looks like a, you know, 80, 90-year-old woman. Anyway, she goes home, she wakes up, she still looks like that. And then throughout the course of the film, you do get the impression that what you see as a viewer is sometimes what other characters see. It's sometimes what no characters see, but the film, what the film wants you to see. It's sometimes what Howl sees, and Howl seems to have the ability to see through magic. So while Sophie believes that Howl sees an old woman, it seems most likely that Howl sees Sophie as a young woman. And also, you mean Adam's shaking his head, so I'll give him the opportunity in a moment to explain why I'm wrong. But what I love about the film so much is the interpretation that the curse isn't that Sophie looks old. The curse is that Sophie looks like how a reflection of her feelings, a connection to her feelings. Adam's now nodding. He will not need to interrupt me. Yeah. And you know what? You did wait. You didn't verbally interrupt, and you still haven't. You're still, yeah, your head's going, shaking, and I happened. Yeah, 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 that's happening. But in a sense, you interrupted, and in another sense, you didn't. I mean, in a sense, you've caused me to interrupt myself. So that's, it's actually kind of powerful what you've done there. It's a very, very clever and powerful. But I love that. I love that idea that the curse is more complicated than how it initially appears, and that actually her appearance is completely tied to how she feels about herself and how she thinks she's viewed. Which makes sense, because when you're introduced to her initially, you're introduced to this young woman who is a milliner, who works in a hat shop, in a fusty, dusty old hat shop, and who seems to be behind the times already and doesn't really have much of a life, and seems to feel and behave and act like an older person or someone who's, you know, already had a big chunk of their life behind them. And I really like that as a sort of visual cue, because it makes the animation much more interesting. As Adam mentioned already, it makes the performances interesting, because in theory you can hear the nuance and the difference in the way that the voice is performed as well. And also it gives a visual to the metaphor of the film, and that's just so clever. I love that, and I love how it makes me question the reality of what I'm seeing throughout the film as well.
It is exactly that.
And just to throw in one absolutely final thing, Joe Hisashi, the composer, who I think is the composer for a number of Miyazaki films, the music in this film, the main refrain, it's maybe the best Ghibli melody, which is saying something, because there's some wonderful music in the other films as well, but that this melody in particular is it is an earworm that will stay with me forever. I love it.
Yeah, what's it's got all the themes, Miyazaki's favourite themes of, like, they're quite Tolkien-esque, in, you know, this kind of anti-industrialisation, anti-war thing that kind of runs through his films. And in Nausicaa, it's really writ large, and it's massive, and it's in your face, and it's just a lot more, it feels just a lot more subtly played out in Howl's Moving Castle. He's got, in almost in the background, these two warring nations. You have no idea really who they are. It doesn't really matter. They're interchangeable. Yeah. One of them is Team Red and one of them's Team Blue.
Well, the war's added as well. I don't know if you knew that, but the war isn't part of the book. So it's not part of the source material. It's something that Miyazaki added himself as the backdrop to this story. Actually, I did a tiny bit of reading. Would you like to hear about the source material?
I would, actually, because I was thinking as we were talking about it, like, yeah, what's different? What did he add? What did he change?
Okay. Well, I asked Colin to help me with this yesterday because I did a little bit of reading about it, and then I wanted to just have what we thought the five key differences between the book and the film were. So the first is the tone. Playful satire is the original book. Dreamlike melancholy is the tone of the film. So the novel, Howl's Moving Castle, is sharp and funny and quite British in its humour, because it is, what's the name? Diane Wynne Jones, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Diana Wynne Jones is, I think she might be Welsh, actually. Like some of the book relates to modern day Wales, which I'll get to in a minute, but at least she's British. So yeah, it's almost poking fun at fairy tale conventions, whereas Miyazaki's film, it softens all of these sharp edges into something a little more wistful and ambiguous. So that kind of trademark Ghibli tone, that's obviously added. The war storyline, that's only in the film. So the whole anti-war thread in the movie, the bombings, the airships, Howl being drawn into the conflict, that's largely invented for the film. In the book, there is no equivalent backdrop. The stakes are more personal and magical rather than political in any way. Howl himself in the book is apparently much more ridiculous. So the character leans more into vanity and absurdity. He's childish. He's dramatic. He's often the butt of the joke. Apparently the novel is quite well structured. So there are rules, there's clues, there's payoffs. Things connect in a sort of puzzle box type way. Whereas the film, as we've described already, is like a much looser. It prioritizes emotional logic over narrative clarity, which is why parts of things feel like they happen without explanation. And then the final thing is that there's a connection to Wales, which is obviously only in the book, and it's a twist. So in the book, Howl is actually from modern Wales. His name is Howl Jenkins, and he has links to places like Cardiff in real life. So the film removes this entirely. It's kind of amazing to think that there are better Ghibli films than this. You know, but there are.
But then, is that not just a taste thing?
I don't. Yeah, I think probably for the most part it is. But I think I would feel fairly confident arguing that Spirited Away is also a superior film, objectively, as well as subjectively.
I think so, but like this now, I think is. I thought this was minor Ghibli. This is major Ghibli now.
This is major Ghibli, I think.
I think it's always been treated as minor Ghibli. That's why we're chatting about it.
I mean, for me, it was always one of my favourites.
Ooh, I was always one of my favourites. I'm not gonna be caught out by anybody.
There's good look, because there's two different types of Ghibli, right? There's magical fantasy Ghibli.
Yeah.
So we've got, you know, My Neighbor Totoro, which is kind, to be honest, is kind of a middle ground between the two, because it's not minor, it's a major Ghibli, mate.
Of course, no, because but that's just because of the canon. But it's so lightweight. It isn't lightweight.
I honestly, I don't know. Like, it's a blind spot for you if you think that's a lightweight movie. It really isn't. Do you remember the emotional core of the film? Do you remember what happens in the film?
Yes, Joe, I do.
What happens?
School me on
what happens.
It's to do with, like, someone's dying. It's always to do with, like, kids and parents and death. And it's just not... It's too simple.
There's a 10-minute period where you think that May, the young girl, has drowned in a pool while their mother is... They think their mother's dying in a hospital. I think it's not lightweight at all. It's presented as lightweight, and it's for younger children to enjoy also. It is not lightweight at all.
No, comparatively... It is. It's not like, not thematically, but like what's going on. It's like there's a cat bus and the kids are too young.
Okay, let's do this a different way. Because look, just to finish what I was saying before, there's magical Ghibli. Then there's Ghibli where there's no magic. Where I feel like when you first get, you go and watch a Ghibli film that's just set in like old Japan and nothing fantasy happens at all, but it's just a lovely story. There are those films as well.
Tales which of I think Poppy Hill.
Yeah. Or, you know... Grave of the Fireflies. I think of those differently, right? But if so, here's what we should do, acknowledging that subjectivity exists. Rank your top five Ghiblis.
Oh, okay. Hang on a sec. Let me rank my top five. I haven't seen all of them, guys. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry.
I've seen a lot of them.
Obviously, you're not picking The Cat Returns.
Absolutely not. Number one is Spirited Away.
Yeah, I mean, that's also my number one.
This viewing of Howl has rocketed Howl up to number two.
Fair enough.
Then it would be... I can't rewatch it, but it's got to be up there. It's Grave of the Fireflies is number three.
Yeah.
Oh, this is tough. This is tough.
It's really tough. It's really tough.
Okay, this is in a bun. It's a bun fight between a couple of flicks now. And then it's Ponyo, number four. And then, do you know what? I think Kiki's Delivery Service beats Mononoke. So Mononoke's been beaten by Kiki's Delivery Service. Because I've seen that. It's been on more often. And
yeah.
Something surprisingly compelling about that flick. And then Mononoke would come in at number six. But yeah,
people
that's
like
it.
Princess Mononoke, yeah. Okay, mine is a little different to yours. Spirited Away is number one.
Yeah.
But My Neighbor Totoro is number two.
Okay.
I think it's just a beautiful classic. Then I would throw in... I'm going to put Grave of the Fireflies 5, because I know it has to be in there, but I don't want to put it at 3 or 4. So I'm just going to get it in there now. So that, you know, so it's stuck in there. And then it's really tricky because for me, there are three films fighting for 3 and 4. And really, one of them should have gone 5th, but, you know, because of how I've done it, it can't happen. Those three films, I really love Nausicaa. I that's one of my favorites. I really like Howl's Moving Castle, but I think it might miss out because I also really love Only Yesterday. Have you seen Only Yesterday?
I haven't seen Only Yesterday.
That's a beautiful film. It's a beautiful, beautiful film. 27-year-old office worker travels to the countryside while reminiscing about her childhood in Tokyo.
Well, importantly, that's director Isao Takahata.
Sure.
Who is not Miyazaki. He also did Pompoko.
You gotta get a couple Takahatas in there.
Of course, and he did Grave of Fireflies. Yep. You know, it's not all Miyazaki.
It's not all Miyazaki. No.
Takahata.
But I tell you what, those films are very different.
Take my hat off to Takahata.
Fuck me.
Takahata?
Taka Yahata off a Takahata.
I think you already got it with that. You nailed it with that first one.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure.
No rogue shout for Porco Rosso, of course. And for anyone listening who don't know what Porco Rosso is, in 1930s Italy, a veteran World War I pilot is cursed to look like an anthropomorphic pig. There you go. Great film.
Miyazaki, he does love flight.
Yeah.
And
the
I think
wind
sometimes to his detriment, you know, he's obsessed with the planes. Wind Rises. Ugh, I mean, I don't want to watch this.
God.
Make
Should
it
play
more...
the box office game.
Yeah, let's play the box office game.
Good, I'm going to derail you from ragging. Snoring. Yeah, we've managed to get through an hour and 30 minutes so far. I don't know what it'll be in the edit, but an hour and 30 minutes of almost exclusively nice, positive talk. And then I could sense there was a little bit of toxicity was coming to spit out there. Okay, let's play the box office game. For the film Howl's Moving Castle, which, as you know, had an opening weekend in the US and Canada. We'll come to that, because obviously that wouldn't have been its main opening weekend, I guess. Let's start with budget, though. Brackets estimated. This was 2005. It was released 2004, 2005.
Yeah, well, I've got no frame of reference for how much they spend on a Ghibli movie.
I don't know how much they spend on a Ghibli movie.
It's years in the making.
It's years in the making.
A lot of drawing going on.
Probably takes a long fucking time.
I don't know, like 20 million US dollars?
Well, you're pretty fucking close. Not inside the temple sink because of $24 million.
That's pretty good. Pretty good, thanks.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Brackets estimated, of course, so it could have been closer. Okay, opening weekend use in Canada, not a write-off completely. I would imagine that there was a cinematic release in Japan that happened where people watched this film. So I think, you know, out of the window goes the 10x rule. Let's just say that here. We'll just say that here and now. And by the way...
Well, so forth, the 10x rule. I think someone's paid to all that kind of silly gubbins, hasn't he? On the old Discord?
I think not put paid. I can't find who it was or what channel they put it in. Unimaginative Dan posted this in the Movies You Forgot Discord, which you can join, by the way, by clicking the link in the description. Come and join our small, thriving, bustling movie fan community. Incidentally, at the moment, everyone is enjoying putting their favourite year of the decade for all decades from the 30s, 40s onwards.
No, sorry, your favourite film of the... Not your favourite year of the decade. What was your favourite year of 1930?
I liked 1933, because that's when Hitler got into power.
What's your favourite year from 1950?
I like 1951, because that's when Mahatma Gandhi was around still.
What's your favourite year in 1980?
Well, my favourite year in 1980 was 1989, because that's the year that I was born.
What's your favourite year in the year, the decade 2000?
Oh, my favourite year in the decade of 2000s was 2008, because that's when I graduated school, and then I wouldn't need to go there again and see those people.
I thought it would be 2001.
Oh,
9/11.
Yeah. Anyway, Unimaginative Dan left this comment, okay? In an effort to get to the bottom of the box office game's 10x rule controversy, I turned to Joe's faithful friend Colin. I asked Colin to tell me what the real multiplier is for all films examined in Movies You Forgot episodes, and Colin's response was startling. While Colin agreed the median multiplier of all the movies was 10... Let me just read that again, Adam. While Colin agreed that the median multiplier of all the movies was 10, Colin considered the mean to be closer to 8. That doesn't make any sense. I made the graph with and without Avengers, as it was hard to see, and it also skewed the results. Okay, so there was a kind of a plotted line graph. Certain factors move movies or films away from the line, according to Colin. So the biggest predictor of overperformance by far is Oscar wins. I think we knew that. Also important was the time of year the movie was released, while genre also has some influence. So Q1 releases and comedies do not tend to have legs, for example. People not finding things funny at the beginning of the year, Adam. Q4 films do a little bit better, although I wonder if that's just because of the proximity to the big award ceremonies. War dramas and sci-fi movies perform close to the rule, while conventional dramas could go wildly either way, depending on whether they were award contenders or what Colin affectionately calls trashy dramas. Colin had a lot to say about different studio tiers, median ratio, and overperformance percentage, but at that point we were just getting a bit too keen, I think. So, TLDR, long live the 8.2x rule. Although I'm still looking for some clarification on how Colin agreed that the median was 10 of all the movies, but also was 8. That's kind of confusing.
Well, I think he's saying it was 10 for the sample size that was given, but it's actually 8.2 in reality.
Right, so of my sample size, it is 10.
Yeah.
And that's all that you and I are arguing.
No.
Well, that's what I've been arguing.
Yeah, you've been arguing whatever you want, whatever fits your narrative.
Yeah, so I'm right with what I've been arguing.
Sure.
And now we know, as an additional and separate piece of information, that it's 8.2, although will it be? Because actually, this is the Movies You Forgot podcast, right? This isn't just some random podcast where we talk about all sorts of different films. This is a specific type of movie where I wonder could it be 10? Who could say? Anyway, how much do you think this made opening weekend US and Canada?
Well, listen, this is coming from Studio Ghibli. This is a couple of years after Spirited Away. Hot to Trot blew everyone away.
Yeah, true,
but it's still not going to make boffo. It'll do okay, maybe. So maybe makes... I'd love it to break a mil. Maybe makes 2 mil.
Nope.
Couple of hundred.
Yeah, 400 and something.
Oh, 400 and something.
$427,000 dollars opening weekend US in Canada. I mean, it could have opened small, potentially. We just don't know. What about gross worldwide? What does a movie like this gross worldwide?
Well, it grosses decent, you know.
Dece McNeese?
Dece. Not as dece as maybe as Spirited, but Well, it's going to do pretty well in Japan. 80 mil?
It made $243 million.
Yeah, so it's American thickos.
I wish the audience could have seen your face then. You were actually, that was real life shock right there. And then what you did was quite a practiced mask, I think, where you instantly changed it back to neutral and then you refused to make any noise as to indicate your shock. Because you actually don't want anyone to know that you could be surprised by information, you know. You know everything. You know everything Christ. Already. You know what I'm saying?
Why just get out? What? It's just because your pants get pulled down with shy horses. You have to pull my pants down.
Wait! Stop! Stop! Turn around! Turn around, take a circle!
Should we do the bit of the show where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot with a view to catching out the other one on a movie they forgot to pick our next episode?
Yes.
You got me on Howl's Moving Castle.
I absolutely did. I got you right up and good and sticky.
I am forever in your debt.
You said that the last time as well.
Yeah. You know, you let me get Donnie Darko, even though you hadn't forgot it.
That's right.
You're a good guy. I think you think you're an arsehole, but you're actually a nice guy.
What a great guy. For listeners, I'm touching the corner of my mouth with my fingers like I'm, what's his name?
Donald Trump?
No, I'm doing, On the Waterfront. Who am I doing?
Marlon Brando?
Yeah.
You sound like Ghostface from Spirited Away.
Okay, hit me. And by the way, have you decided what your default film is?
The default film is now Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes.
Right.
Nick Cage, directed by Brian De Palma.
Another Nick Cage, another Brian De Palma. We just did Nick Cage the other day.
Don't care.
Oh my God, this guy's fucking rogue. All right, come on then.
A Most Violent Year.
What with fucking your man Oscar Isaac?
Yeah. Look at his face. I've absolutely golden ducked the cunt.
I just don't want to watch it though. Can I hear some more?
Okay, here's one from Twinkle T from the Discord.
Okay.
Because there's footy coming on. I'm going to throw it in there. Mike Bassett, England manager.
Do you know, I've never seen Mike Bassett, England
Thank
manager.
Christ for that, because I've never seen it.
I'd love to watch it at some point, but I've never seen it.
Sorry, Twinkle T. I did my best.
We both watched Saipan the other day, though, didn't we, separately? But I agreed with your consensus. I mean, you actually are the kind of person that could have a consensus on his own. But I agreed with your consensus, which was the guy who played Roy Keane was fucking unreal.
Ina Hardwick.
Oh yeah, Ina Hardwick. That's right. Yeah,
absolutely phenomenal.
Did you ever get that in your head? That's from Blues Brothers, isn't it? When you're walking around. Sometimes when I'm walking around.
Soul?
Is that the Pixar movie?
Yeah.
I didn't really like Soul that much. My friend Paul Ansorge is one of his... He really, really loves that film. We watched it and just together for Movie Club a couple of years ago, but I didn't really get on with it that well.
Sorry, Philip Choi.
Hmm.
Lethal Weapon?
I've never seen Lethal Weapon. I think those are two different songs.
Are they? I thought they were the same. I do want you to watch the movie. I want you to have fun.
Yep.
RoboCop. No. No, okay, I'll save, forget that one.
I don't know what you think. I love that you just said, I want you to want to watch the movie, I want you to have fun, and then you just said a film that you love, that you know I don't like.
No, forget that one. Amelie? He's shaking his face. He's making, he's just gone, he's made the sick noise. Oh, okay. The Farewell?
I don't know if I've ever seen that. What's that?
It's got Awkwafina in it. It was all the rage.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Fuck.
Didn't see it. I don't really know who Awkwafina is. Awkwafina.
I like to call her Awkwafina.
Right.
Okay, right. Give me one more bonus.
Uh-huh.
Because you said no to, I did get you, and you didn't want to.
Yeah,
do
you've
it.
Got. Oh, you've got me. I'll do it. I'll do that one if you don't get me on this one.
The Master,
the PTA film.
PTA. I've got it on Blu-ray.
Let's do a Most Violent Year.
Oh my Christ!
I don't like The Master. I'm not really that much of a PTA fan, you know. I just really liked One Battle After Another because it's actually a really good film.
Yeah. Well, I think you'd find that out if you rewatched The Master, and you'd find out actually.
I've rewatched The Master three times because people I respect really rate it, and I spend half the film going, "What did he say? What's he saying? What? Say that again."
Doors.
And then I can tell that Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman had a lot of fun together, and I'm not questioning that it's not good acting. It's just good acting about a thing that I don't give a fuck about. You know, just don't care.
Okay, well,
let's watch A Most Violent Year.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's got Jessica Chastain in it as well.
It's got Jessica Chastain, yeah.
Jessica Chastain. Yeah. That sounds like what's that alien that transfers into a lorry?
Optimus Prime.
Yeah, Jessica Chastain and Optimus Prime sound like they're from the same alien planet.
She's been coming, you know, she's been promised with a tree of life, but we've got her That's with true, a most yeah. violent year.
Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, she is quite cold and alien-like, so it's good.
That's true. Yeah. She killed Bin Laden. Let's not forget. Let us not forget who really killed Bin Laden. Jessica Chastain. 30 Seconds to Mars. Jessica Chastain. What's that film called? Not 30 Seconds to Mars. It's the Jared Whoa, Leto band.
Take me down. Jessica. I'm not marrying you.
Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, great. Jessica Chastain.
Jessica that stain.
Oh, it is late in the day. Hello.
Hi there, is that the dry cleaning place?
Yeah, how's it going?
Pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, you know, easy does it. Easy come, easy go. It's always one more stain.
Well, it's funny you should say that, actually, because I'm calling up because I wore my tuxedo out last night and I spilled some pickle juice on it, and I was hoping that you could Jessica that stain for me.
Jessica that stain.
Yeah, I was hoping you could Jessica it.
Jessica that stain. Sorry, hang on. We do a dry cleaning service, yeah. Sir, and I don't know, I'm not familiar. Is this something else another dry cleaning service has done for you?
Have you never heard of Jessica that stain?
No. What does it do to the stain? Because we get rid of the stain, but I've never Jessica'd a stain.
Yeah, you Jessica it, yeah.
Sorry, is that the verb? Is that just you're saying? Is that how you get rid? That's to mean to get rid of Jessica.
Yeah, to Jessica something.
To Jessica, to get rid of.
You've really never heard that before.
So what? So for example, if I were to like, if I finish my dinner and clean the plate, I'd go, I Jessica'd that dinner.
Okay, I see what you're saying. No, so the stain has to have kind of come out of nowhere in order for it to be Jessica'd. That's how it works, right? So it has to come out of nowhere, and then almost immediately, as soon as it's come, it's got to go again. So the thing is, the stain happened last night, and I need you to Jessica it for me so that it's gone pretty quickly, okay? Because if it's hanging around for a couple of days more, then it wouldn't be a Jessica-ing. It would just be like a stain removal service. But that's what, you know, that's the slang. I actually don't know where it comes from, but I guess it makes sense. Everyone seems to understand it apart from you.
Right. It's just because I'm the person who's doing the stain and I'm not familiar with, like, I didn't realise that there would be some kind of time-related thing. Who's to know when I get rid of the stain? Is this like a Gremlins thing?
Well, I'll know because I want to drop it off tomorrow and I want to pick it up the day after, so I'll know.
Yeah, but the stain won't know. How does the stain know if I got rid of it, like, soon after it got done and soon after?
Well, the stain isn't saying whether it's been Jessica'd or not. That's me. I'm using the word Jessica. Do you think I'm the stain? I'm calling you from the sleeve of a tuxedo. Hello, I'm a stain. I'd like to be Jessica'd, please.
No, I know you're not a stain, but you're referring to the stain as if it isn't removed after a certain amount of time, it can't be done. Like, the stain is the stain.
Listen, I'm going to lose my mind if we have to keep going around in circles like this. I'm going to send myself head first through a stained glass window.
I mean, it sounds like you're going to shorn your pen.
What's that? What did you say?
Well, it sounds like you're going to shorn your pen. You've heard that phrase before, right?
No, what does that mean?
If you shorn your pen, it means you get so angry, you throw your pen away. You shorn your pen, and you kind of get...
Oh, right.
Yeah?
Like you've shorn a sheep.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. You've kind of got rid of the pen, you've shorn it. I can't believe that. I've been saying that for years.
I've never heard that one. Sounds cool, though. Maybe I'll pick it up, you know?
I mean, there's quite... I wonder what other figures of speech there are.
I've also got some trousers that need Lawrencing. Could you Martin those?
Could I Lawrence Martin your trousers? Who's Lawrence Martin?
No.
Sorry, what? Could you? I can't Lawrence
say what
Martin.
I'm saying, sir. What I'm saying is that I've got some trousers that need Lawrencing. Can you Martin that? You know, can you Martin Lawrencing my trousers?
Oh, can I Martin? Yeah, sorry, that was confusing. Absolutely. No, yeah, absolutely. We Martin Lawrence people's trousers. You know, that's where I learned my trade, was Martin Lawrencing trousers.
Oh, so you know about Martin Lawrencing, you just don't know about Jessica-ing that stain.
Of course, I'd never heard of that. But, you know, if you carry on like this, I'm going to have to go for a Tom Cruise.
What does that mean?
That just means I'm going to go to a men's bathroom and... and jerk off into the urinal and hope that someone is lying underneath the grate and will catch the jizz.
I thought that was called a Benjamin Buttoning.